have a lot of fun with her talk.
Moin Hamburg.
Moin Hamburg.
Wer bin ich, dass ich hier heute reden darf?
Who am I? I work for the left faction in the German parliament and was part of the AI commission, and I used to work in digital education, and I've been watching this topic of AI and education for several years. I gave a talk on the Remote Congress 3 years ago on the same topic, but it was still kind of blurry, and American China might have been doing things, but not really in Germany. But that suddenly changed in Germany with ChatGPT. AI in schools is now omnipresent. And it's clearly become a bigger topic. I'm very glad about that. I'm not going to tell you how to use ChatGPT in teaching. I only want to give you some ideas of what to watch out for with AI in the classroom, because this topic is only going to grow over the next few years. Of course, not everything doesn't have to happen as I tell you, but I think this is a good moment to focus on a few things. So over the next half hour, I'm going to give you an introduction on the status quo, then promises and challenges, propose some ideas for assistance, and give an outlook on AI regulation. When I prepared this talk, I thought, okay, it's at the end of the year, the AI regulation will be here. As you know, this was optimistic. But what's the status quo anyway? There is automation and AI in schools. That's been there for a couple of years already. The knowledge or the realization that this happens isn't quite as extensive yet. And that's not because schools don't want to know or don't understand. It's mainly due to the intransparency of vendors. Because while other industries like to advertise the use of AI, that's not the case in schools, because learning is a social process, and automation, AI, tech isn't a very popular subject, and industry and e-tech startups have hidden behind terms like intelligent tutor systems or adaptive learning, so that the real extent of automation has been hidden. And then there are large gaps of knowledge and expertise. The knowledge on KI has increased. A lot of people know about the terms AI and can explain what an algorithm is, but in society at large there are large gaps, and so it is in schools. The expertise we have there is mostly applied expertise, so how to use ChatGPT in school, but knowing what is an AI system, how is it built up, what's the difference to standard software, that's not at a level that we would need to see. And these gaps now meet this narrative of chances or opportunities from politics and industry, who like to admit that, yes, AI has risks and downsides, but the opportunities are so much larger. That's something we see everywhere in the debate on AI. We have risks, but the chances are so much bigger, and that's why we need to lift them and ignore the risks in order to not stand in the way of innovation. And these narratives exist from the e-tech industry on the one side. I don't mean advertising, but ED, not AD, so ED for education. And the same is true in politics on the level of the European Union, but also in federal ministries. AI is at the forefront, and always with this forefront of improving education and relieving teachers, which has always worked fantastically, hasn't it? One thing that's problematic in the debate is that there is no agreed definition of what AI is, what an adaptive learning system is, but we hope that the AI regulation at least gives us a definition that you can refer to, even though it probably won't be optimal. But what's the problem? Why do we need to talk about AI in schools on this this conference? The promises are great. Like you can teachers can reduce their workload. It's supposedly can contribute to educational equity if you can personalize education to the individual student. Generative AI can improve creativity, inclusion, well, obviously, translation models, language models, and of course, progress. Germany hasn't really done a lot to improve digital education, but if we can play at the top on this topic of AI, then we can be at the very bleeding edge of AI, and all of these exist, but they are based on the idea and on the utopical idea that all of these systems work without problems. And you have to look at the risks as well. There are risks of discrimination. There's the legal situation that is still slightly unclear because the AI regulation hasn't been passed yet. But there is, of course, GDPR, which also schools need to look out for. There are special paragraphs that apply here. There are the school laws. But before I delve into that, I would like to talk about pedagogy, dependence and lobbying from the edtech industry and the teacher shortage. We have the problem that AI needs to be operationalized, so these educational contents need to work within the system. And we have the problem that AI in general, there is a need for modeling, training and feedback. So these data, these systems are never neutral. The argument is often used that teachers also have biases, so it's better if we leave certain decisions to automated systems. But these systems aren't neutral either. They too have biases that influence the selection of data. For example, we know this from the United States, where health topics can be deemed pornographic, where ChatGPT was asked to create pro and con arguments, but one side was weighted higher. And of course, it makes it difficult for schools to find out how value judgments are happening. And to bring this back to real life, it's as if you added a second teacher to the classroom, but this second teacher won't tell you where they're from, what they studied, nor how they reached their decisions. That's not something a real teacher would ever do, but because this is modern and innovative technology, that seems to be okay. Then, of course, the topic of correlation versus causality. There are systems that give a teacher an overview of the progress of their students, but of course they lose the focus on the individual student. So if an individual student has been performing more poorly, they might be might be classed in a new category, but a teacher would be better suited to understand if there are problems at home, in the relationship of their parents, or if the student reached puberty. A teacher can figure these out, as an automated system won't figure it out. And of course, there are also answers that are wanted by the system, and that can be deemed a success without actually them being based on a real progress in learning. I know of a student who simply added the required keywords to a text they wrote without actually any real understanding, and the system said, yeah, it's a great text because it simply counted the keywords. And of course, there's the theory of hyper-individualization. Individualization, this differentiation from within, is something that's actually wanted. Because students are different and they learn at different speeds, and it's a good idea to give them different tasks. But if this leads to a hyper-individualization where each and every child has their own path of learning, then the social aspect will recede into the background.
At the moment, there is no research that can confirm artificial intelligence in the school is helpful for the pedagogic aspect or is helpful for educational equality. And in the long run, we don't know anything yet. Can the schools with the good equipment, do they have to, like, can they learn with artificial intelligence, or is it that the poorly equipped schools have to use those systems? And then one of my most favorite topics, media competency. In the context of generative artificial intelligence, it's repeated over and over again. We all need media competency and we have to learn how to deal with it. And my colleague Anna Roth has been given a presentation on Monday about digital violence. And this is also, of course, a topic in school with mobbing and violence and bullying. And women that have been suffering through digital violence, and it seems strange to tell them that you just need media competency. And of course, we do not point out enough about the work situations that are coming along with training such the artificial intelligence systems. And I can imagine that when we use it in educational systems, maybe we realize more what this means for the people in the background, what resources are used in order to generate those models. And we have been working for years to work towards that technology and software has to be free and has to be hackable. But then, of course, with the black boxes and closed artificial intelligence systems, we just teach the kids, computer says no, the system is closed, we can't do anything about it, you have to just take it like this. And I don't think that this, like, with that media competency turns away from something active towards something passive on an individual level, and I don't think that this is what media competency is all about. The next block is the entire topic on ethics, startups, and economy. The more systems there are in the schools, of course, the higher is the dependency on those companies. We realized it with ChatGPT, where the general terms and conditions has changed, and then they had to hire a time frame on 13 years, but they can also change different structures. Like in the beginning, it was free of charge with ChatGPT, but then there was a level of payment. So later on, the people that can actually afford it, they can continue working with the better systems, and the others just have to stick with what they can reach without payment. And of course, this is not an individual thing on an individual family. It also means schools and federal structures. And at the same time, there's a dependency on in the IT security. there are nice research aspects. There are some people looking at learning apps. There was also a bigger investigation on Human Rights Watch. They had a look on the learning systems with respect to the pandemic situation, and they put out some critics on some systems that are also used in some federal states in Germany. And we have to fight for the level of IT security. It has to be high. It's a utopia. It's a fight. And of course, the access to technology can change depending on the development of the company. Maybe a school is working with a system for a few years, and then the business case is changed. The company is sold to Microsoft or something, or maybe the system goes down and we don't know what happens with the data. This is not an altruistic company just because they are working with educational area, and the business cases they have work on people that are not of full age yet, and then they improve on their data, and then they have license income. So it's a business case, and I just want to recommend the talk from Sebastian and Ingo from Netpolitics on this topic. The offers they say, yeah, we are sticking to the general data protection rules, so there's no problem. But yeah, these kind of things, they already use data on minors, and this is something different. And of course, if you have been around, then you've realized that in Germany we have a problem with the shortage of teachers. And maybe because we have those systems, we stop putting so much effort into the question why we have this situation, and maybe we reduce the amount of power putting into that to fix it. And there are already quotes from people in charge that say, on the long run, we have to make sure that the older students will have to learn without teachers. But some students don't just have that motivation to do that on their own, and they will probably fall over on the back. Yeah, that was the term, topic replacement. And even if there are systems that are really working well and some pedagogic task can be outsourced, maybe this is also an impact on the aspect of the attractivity to become pedagogic and the teacher. And when the teacher is suddenly a person that's just guiding you while learning, then maybe fewer people want to become teachers. And then, of course, de-skilling is something that will stick along. When you use machines, then you sometimes people use skills. And then, of course, the topic of human-machine interaction. It's often repeated that the human, in the end, makes a decision, but there is some research which suggests that this is an illusion. We have a machine bias, and the illusion that the human person at the end will look at everything is just like covering up some of the problems. And even if people or teachers in the end check everything, the artificial intelligence systems, how they judge, and then of course this also needs time, and then there's a question of, is that really then supporting to reduce the load, or is it just shifting the job tasks? And of course, because the topic is real, we want to have some assistance, and there is some assistance about ChatGPT in the classroom, and how this happens in what are the risks of social impacts and stuff is mostly not content in those guidelines. And then there was a pandemic, so I had some time and I started to write my own guidelines, and I had a work in the commission And I thought it's a very interesting thing to explain people how the systems are set up and which risks come in at which point. And you need to explain this so that we can take care that it's done properly. And then there's an initiative called Unblack Box. There we have this cooperation that we came up with these guidelines. You can find it online, you can contribute, you can reproduce it, you can copy it. And this guideline tries to look at artificial intelligence in a global sense and is not sticking to ChatGPT directly. And there are different levels. We start with the question, why do we have artificial intelligence in the first place? The school should ask this question, what artificial intelligence, why do we want artificial intelligence? What is our problem? What data do we have? And is it really artificial intelligence that's the solution here? And then, of course, we came with some questions that you should put forward to the people offering systems. Which data sources do you use? And who's impacting the modeling? And of course, the hands-on aspect, where we suggest that the teachers should talk to others that also work with the systems. Is it really helpful? How do the students interact with it? Is it fun? And then, of course, the aspect on work. So all the employed teachers get guidelines and help, how they can protect themselves from maybe surveillance that happens, which qualifications they need or can ask for. And then there's another aspect of information, where we refer to another document about machine and human interaction, just to point out that it's not imagined, but there are experiences from other people, other countries that we don't have to repeat. And we shouldn't even. And now there is a more exciting aspect.
The AI regulation, we know there's going to be a definition. This definition is probably going to be a bit more broad than was being discussed initially, so it's going to encompass more systems. And when we have this definition, we hope there's going to be an increased transparency on the part of the vendors. So that automation can no longer remain hidden. There is going to be some prohibitions. The use of emotion recognition is going to be prohibited, and there are two more areas that are going to be disallowed. You will not be allowed to use categorization on the basis of sensitive data, which probably includes biometric data. There are already applications that use biometric data, and you will not be allowed to influence the behavior of people if this could lead to damage. Depending on how these systems are designed, some aspects might be banned, but there are these applications are usually going to be in the high risk area, and there were several competing ideas of what should be covered by this high risk area. Is it only systems that control access to educational organizations? We have to wait for the text, and there are some more areas that cover education. These are the exceptions for research systems that are being developed for research are going to be accepted from these. Of course, that might be abused. ChatGPT was initially conceived as a research tool, so we can expect to see more and more so-called research tools that actually real applications on the market. And of course, if AI research or research that uses AI happens to find that AI in research is great, then that would be an interesting finding, because these black box approaches are in violation of the scientific requirements of transparency, and that's not necessarily the case with AI. There are further exceptions for open source software under certain conditions. We want to support open source software, but in AI, open source doesn't necessarily mean there are no problems. The current example is Leon. You might have read about it. It's a database that was also used to train versions of Stable Diffusions, but it also includes child sexual abuse material, and it's the open source program of a German teacher. There are other systems that are being accepted here. Another highlight is that there is no external verification of these AI systems. Unlike with your car, there is no external verification. The companies themselves decide yes, we're high risk, but of course we follow the law. And this can only be controlled when a damage occurs. We don't know which would be the relative authority, how they would be endowed, how they would be able to follow their tasks. And these foundation models, actually, they should be their own talk. We try to make sure that foundation models aren't regulated on the developer side, but only on the user side. That would have affected not just small and medium enterprises, but also authorities and schools. Now we've found a kind of middle way. So for foundation or general purpose AI, there are going to be rules. They're not the same as the rules for high risk systems. There are various definitions on why one system is different from the other, but from what I've heard from colleagues, it's very confusing. It seems very arbitrary how these lines are being drawn, simply to prevent developers from having to take on more responsibility. And of course, there's a rule that when you use a foundation model and either change it significantly, or when a basic application uses it in a high-risk application, you become a vendor of this system, and you're responsible for complying with this AI regulation. Of course, in education, everything is high-risk automatically, but that depends on what's being defined as high-risk in the legal text. So there's legal uncertainty, and it's unclear what is the threshold for becoming a provider where you have to bear legal responsibility. And there are various loopholes with real laboratories, tests under real conditions. So EdTech startups can still say, we only do a pilot project for 1 year, and these two are mostly excluded from the AI regulation. There is the duty of declaration, so teachers have to explain to parents how they reach their decisions. How that's supposed to work with a black box AI system, I have no idea. Of course, this system only contributes, it's not going to dominate teaching, but where is the threshold? How do you say that this part of the mark is due to the handwritten things the student wrote, and that part is due to what came out of the AI system? And of course, there's liability. There's going to be an AI liability regulation, product liability regulation, and that's going to affect insurance premiums. So this too is something that schools have to plan for. So it all sounds like I think AI in schools is bad. Well, it depends. It's really the question of whether or not this is going to reduce work for teachers, or whether it's just going to move that work. So how can we use these opportunities? Whenever I've been talking about this in past years, I said that we need to differentiate. There is the topic of digital education. There are applications like ChatGPT, and there's the global topic of artificial intelligence. And currently, most people only talk about ChatGPT, but other applications like adaptive learning or have to be covered more. Then I expect that people who want to become active in these areas and companies that are actively using AI become more transparent, that we make these systems explainable as far as possible. If that means that we can only use certain algorithms, so what? Then we need these authorization procedures, especially in sensitive areas, and of course in breadth and in depth we need further education and training. I'm almost done. These recommendations I wrote down a couple of years ago, I'm not lazy by just showing them to you again, because nothing really changed about the status quo. There might be a slightly larger potential on a macro level, and we're on a hacker congress. And any of you who want to develop these systems where we can use open data to look at how we can optimize the basis of these systems, how we can address the teacher shortage. There are examples from Belgium and Switzerland who recalculated the way to school. All of those can be done with AI, but hardly anyone invests in them. I wonder why. There's a MISO level. I think that's pretty unproblematic. If teachers use AI to create learning material, that's okay. They're adults. But anything that reaches students or that uses students' data, I think there should be an age limit. And I'm not alone in this. UNESCO has said the same thing. Started 13 years at the earliest. That's I wrote together with Sigrid Hartung. I wrote a book on this, or I edited a book on this on AI in schools, and all the implications in education are covered. This will be available in spring. I say thank you for now, and if you have any questions, I'm going to do my best to answer them.
Thank you, Nina Gala, for this update. I suppose we have some questions. Number three, please. Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah. Thank you very much for this exciting and helpful talk. I have a question about artificial intelligence systems as black box systems. Of course, this means big things, but also other platforms like Hacking Face, there are thousands of models. I'm interested in that context. Why is educational sector is not on default looking to open source? It's all tax money that is pushed into those systems. And of course, public money, public code should apply. The federal barriers may be overcome, and then there's enough money to pay for skilled developers that will produce open source tools, and then the students can actually contribute in working with their tools. This can also become part of the education, like improve your own tools. Why is this not the default? Yes, that's valid for all the applications in the public domain. We have this example, open source and artificial intelligence systems. Doesn't mean there's no problems. But in the political sphere, apparently there is not a big interest in this. Others have tried this, and the black boxes are not. It's a general aspect. Not all products are black boxes. Some technologies can be understood, and I think it's important to invest into being able to understand what it is. But not all areas are like. The politic is not pushing that for the areas. And in school, there's a little too few liberty to fight against what the federal state says, and we want our own system. And I really want to say that you cannot expect this from school. The teachers do so much. It would be way too much to ask them to learn everything and go forward with this activism. Thank you. Number one. Hi. Is there an idea or are there ideas and concepts how you can manage the aspect that you have to go to school, but then you are free to choose whether or not you want to use those systems? Thank you very much for this question. I'm really not sure what will happen when three parents in an entire classroom say we don't want to use these systems. Will they have disadvantages? I'm not sure. This has not been the case yet. Of course, there's a frustration from the pandemic. In the education system, there's still this polarized debates. Stop with the privacy. You don't have to fight against everything. You're against the technology. And of course, we want to debate that not everything that is critical is from the corner of Manfred Spitzer. There are some debates that are worth working through. Okay, another question from Micro 2. The media competency that you mentioned for teachers, it's of course an additional aspect that will probably lower the attractiveness of that jobs. And is that thought of and how to solve this? And of course, you ask for solutions. I wish I would have answers. All I say is that we know that these problems are there and there is too little offer. And the entire mix of technology and pedagogics and the law level, and there is not a huge amount of places where all this comes together. And of course, we have chaos goes to school. Please do this, advertise yourself, go to the schools and help them, because they need us, they need you. A concrete question about transparency in artificial intelligence. Is there reason to hope that they have to actually declare their sources and stuff? Bing AI, for example, if you search for something with Bing AI, I'm looking for ABC and these kind of keywords, and with the answers, it's said that why these pages have been suggested. Is there something like this like that has to be there in the artificial intelligence? We have to wait for the law process. There is a long list of what the systems have to provide, what they have to make sure, but what obligations they have in the end, what they have to make transparent and what they have to declare is something we have to wait for the final version, but we are afraid that it will not be beautiful, not containing everything that we wish for it. Micro number two, thank you for the presentation. You suggested that teachers should get into exchange with others about the hands-on experience with artificial intelligence systems. So from my experience, people, the teachers are just not part of the discussion what the school starts to buy. It's just like they get the tools and then they have to take it. Do you know examples where this is working and the teachers actually are part of the discussion before getting the systems? Yeah, that's true. Sometimes on the federal state level, the decisions have been made and then the technology is bought and the ideal that we put into this guidelines is something we have to establish. And there are some individual aspects where teachers like started to organize themselves and they said we come up with a basis technology for our school systems. I'm lacking the name right now. I don't get it. It's lost in my mind. There is an example, a concrete example. I don't remember the name. In the moment, it's fine with the law because the artificial regulation is not in place yet. So all the systems that are in place until then don't apply. Like the artificial intelligence regulation does not apply to all the technologies. So FITE, the name of the system is FITE. Maybe you can check it out in your social media. At least they try to develop something, but I haven't managed to look into it in details. Thank you. I work and do research in this area since a couple of years, and I wanted to say that those systems are also helpful, because if we differentiate between what's the vision we want to reach and how rocky is the road, of course there's a lot of challenges to write those guidelines. I'm not sure if I would like to write those guidelines. It's probably a very difficult task. An example that I want to say, maybe I didn't quite get your worries, to reduce the amount of work for teachers, I don't want to have the example from the pre-talker. There's an open source tool. Can you please give me a guesstimation, what you think, how good is the report of the student? Of course, I will pay attention to what's happening there with the student, and I'd say, look at those things and help me, give me some suggestions for correcting things. And of course, this is also difficult for the people that actually want to learn. For example, the German teacher has much more work to do because they have 10,000 pages to correct, and then of course the feedback will maybe differ from the first page. I don't want to judge anybody, but when I have to correct through the night, then of course these kind of systems can be helpful for the teachers. I don't want to ask the model, is it correct what the student says, but these are the important things I want for an argumentation. Can you check whether this is contained in the answer of the student? Yes, sure. In theory, this could be helpful. The reality check shows that the systems are not quite yet there. Okay, we do this in our university since 1 year. Okay, then you're an exception. That's fine. I want to say thank you to Nina for this update about digital learning technologies. And can you please help me?